Today is August 17th, the year 2000. I'm here at the Ellis Island studio with Steve G. Basic, who came from Croatia in May 16th, 1938, when he was 9 years of age. And this is Janet Levine for the National Park Service. And if I could start at the beginning on the tape with your birth date and where in Croatia you were born.
I was born on September 19th, 1928, in a town called Perušić, P-E-R-U-S-I-C, province of Lika, L-I-K-A, at the foot of the Velebit Mountains in Croatia. At the time, it was not Yugoslavia. It was Kingdom of Serbs, Croatians, and Slovenians. And if you look at the stamps, you'll see SHS, which is in Croatian, or that Slavic language, Serbs, Hrvati, Slovenci.
Okay. Now, did you live in the same place in Croatia up until 1938?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
My father built a house there. That he was in the United States. And he built this house. He never slept one night in it.
When did your father come to the United States?
My father came here first time in 1923, then he came to Croatia in 1927. I was born in 28, and he went back in right after the Christmas holidays in 1928.
Uh-huh. And what was your father's name?
Stephen.
And
Stjepan. S-T-J-E-P-A-N. That's the Croatian name for Steve.
Stephen, right. And how about your mother? What was her name?
Her name was Anna Manda Obucina, O-B-U-C-I-N-A. She married my father on January 1st, 1919. They had four children. My sister Catherine, who was the oldest, she died a year and a half ago. Her married name was Porcinic, P-O-C-R-N-I-C. And my brother Joe, who was killed in the Second World War, he wasn't killed in the war. The war was over. He came home to his family, wife and two kids, taken away. To this day, we don't know where he was killed, where he was buried. And he is one of them that stories that I really touches me very much every time I talk about it. I also have a brother, Michael, who served 4 years in the United States Army in the Pacific. He now lives in California, where he's widowed. He has three children there. And then, of course, that's me. I'm married to a girl born in the United States of Croatian background. Her mother, father comes from the island of Hvar, H-V-A-R. My mother comes from a little town near Mostar, where the in Herzegovina called Opuzen, O-P-U-Z-E-N. And we got married in 1959, 10-4 over and out. That's why I used to say October 4th, 1959. Mm-hmm. We have three wonderful children. My daughter, Anne-Marie, she's the oldest. She'll be 40 years old this October. She's an attorney by choice, I guess. My son, Stephen, he's about 37 now. He works at home with us. He works at whatever he feels like doing. He's got a place to stay. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm from the old school. You don't kick him out. You always keep close to him. My youngest daughter just became a mother on July 18th. She gave birth to a little girl, Mikaela Rose. Mm-hmm. And she's married to a gentleman by the name of Michael Clancy, who is not a true Irishman, half Irish, half Polish, and God knows what else. That's the story of my family.
Okay, wonderful. Well, did you ever know your grandparents?
I never knew my paternal grandparents. My grandfather, Joe Obucina, who came to the United States, I guess, in the early 1900s. He worked in various parts of the United States, especially in Chicago. And the last, but not least, was Minnesota, up in the Iron Range Basin of Minnesota. He was a foreman on two jobs. And after the First World War was over, he was preparing to come home to his wife and family. And he was murdered up there in a little town near Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And I had the distinction, or my duty, I guess, to go locate this grave, and I did find it.
Do you know anything about surrounding the murder?
Well, what I did is I went to the library in Grand Rapids and pulled out the newspapers from 1919. Front page had the whole story. How much money he had, how much they stole. It was well over $5,000.
Oh, it was a robbery.
Oh, it was a killing and a murder. Murder, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was about, what they figured, it was about seven guys who attacked him, probably people that he worked with him or probably people from the same area in the old country. And he took out three guys with him. He knocked them out, my grandfather. He was a tall man, 6 foot six, very heavy. But they clubbed him to death, and he died 3 days later in the hospital. I believe somehow the police never found out what happened, and the case was just left unopened. But when I found the grave, I went one day where the cemetery was, and I had to look for the grave. There was nobody at the grave to tell me where the graves were. I started 9 in the morning until 5 at night, and I couldn't find it. I kept going across the field. There's some graves in the ground. You couldn't see the names. But I said to myself, that time they used crosses. Croatians would use crosses because they were Catholic. And I couldn't find it. So I drove out of the car. I changed maybe 10 times from the sweating of the heat. It was one of the hottest days in the year. I drove the car out. I went down to the other side. There was a dead end. I came back like somebody pulled my arm, go back in. So there was a little plot there on the very end, which I didn't go to. I started going there. I see all the names from my hometown, like Štimac, Rukavina, Hecimović, Murgić, Dasović, Pavlić, all kinds of names from my hometown. And the very last grave by the fence, Josip Obucina, O-B-U-C-I-N-A. I cried out, Bože, Bože, God, God, thank you, God. And I cried. Yeah. I really. And then I saw some flowers on there. I had no family there. Mm. I said, who puts the flowers? So going down south, I had a gentleman who knew about, who was born in the area. He was born in the United States, a Croatian mother and father. He was a principal in a high school in South St. Paul, Minnesota. Oh, he said, that's your cousin, Hecimović. I said, I don't have any cousins, Hecimović. Well, I called him and I found out what happened was, when the Hecimović came from the old country, he couldn't get a passport in his own name. So he borrowed his cousin's passport, came to the United States, that's what he stayed. Instead of being an Obucina, he stayed a Hecimović for the rest of his life. And they still have children up there that were living.
How do you spell Hecimović?
H-E-C-I-M-O-V-I-C, Hecimović. Now, my father's father was Mile Bašić, Mike Basic. And he worked for a company called Walsh Construction Company. He died in 1923, 10 days before my father came to the United States. So he didn't get a chance to see his father alive. Mm-hmm. And my brother Mike, when he got out of the service in 45, he went to Walsh Construction Company. He said, I'd like a job. He said, what's your last name? He says, Michael Basic. So the guy who was interviewing, he says, wait a minute. He goes in the back file, comes out with a file, and brings out the file of my grandfather, Mile Bašić. And he says to him, are you related by any chance to Mile Bašić? He says, yes, that's my grandfather. You got a job any place you want in the United States. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a foreman. And all the Croatians that came from the old country were hard working people. Because they worked the farms, they continued doing so. And he had such a wonderful record with his company that anybody, and all the guys that were younger than him that came there became foremen, like my father's first cousin, Joseph. He got a free house up in Syracuse because of the work he did. Mm. That's the way they used to work it. Yeah. And go ahead.
They were foremen in what? In what kind of work?
The construction road, working railroad ties, all this stuff. All the hard work that was done. I mean, all the roads going from New York to Albany West were done by our Croatian people. You go up to the Hudson Valley, you stop into Peekskill, that's where my grandfather's buried. You go up a little further, Beacon, you'll find Croatian names in every grave.
You want to give me your name in Croatian?
Stipe, S-T-I-P-E, Bašić, B-A. To pronounce it in English, you'd have to spell it B-A-S-H-I-C-H. But I left it basic because that's the way we pronounce it. Okay. See, if I gave it Bašić, the anglicized, it'd be a completely different name.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to change it.
Right.
Go ahead.
Now, were your grandparents on each side, were they from Croatia back?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm doing my family history now, and I've got to the point where I've gone back to the 15th century. Where the Croatian priest by the name of Mesic, M-E-S-I-C, stood up and against the Turks to get him out of our country. And it mentions the name Stjepan Bašić, which is me, from my home, from my same village where I'm from. Mm-hmm. When I saw that also, and that's why I asked you, will you help me with when they come in with the records? So I can know when, I can give you the names of people and I know when they came over, approximately. Get their records so I could put it together. Mm-hmm. And I got started with this. Give you an example. When I moved to California, I wasn't feeling too well. So I went out to California. I was a salesman by trade. I can tell you my whole history, how I got to be there.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm in California selling draperies and bedspreads to furniture stores, specialty shops, department stores. I'm in San Diego. I had a habit of always looking in the phone book to see if I found a Basich, basic. So I found a name, B-A-S-I-C-H. I don't use the H at the end. He does. So I look in the phone book. It says George E. I said, wait a minute, George. It's got to ring a bell. So I pick up the phone, call up the guy. I says, is this George Basic? He says, yes. Could you any chance be from Columbus, Ohio? He says, yes. Hold the phone. Now, get the Schlewitzer ready. I'll be down in 5 minutes. Schlewitzer, of course, is the plum brandy, Croatian.
Right.
So I got down there. He opens the door. I look at him. He looks at me. He says, you're Steve Basic's son from New York. And I said, your uncle George, my great uncle George's son from Columbus. So we started on the family tree. That's how he got me started. And his father, my great uncle, was in the Boxer Revolution in 1900 in China, in the Austria-Hungary Navy. And as they were going back to the States, instead of going through India, Indian Ocean, they went across the Pacific into New York. When he got to New York, he jumped ship, and he got off, and he found a beautiful young Tyrolese girl from Tyrol, part near Austria, mm-hmm. Switzerland, mm-hmm. and they got married. They must have moved, I would say, maybe 50 times in their lifetime. They had 15 children. They only have one left. And I had that privilege of going to see her last fall with my wife. And I tell you something, we never knew each other at all.
Yeah.
She received me like my own mother would. Can I describe it any better?
Mm, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay, tell me about growing up.
Growing up. Okay.
The first 9 years of your life.
Well, growing up in the old country, I'll give you an example. First of all, we went to school in the morning one day, in the afternoon the other day, because we were farmers. So we had to tend the flock, like the sheep and the horse, cows and the goats and things of that. That was given to children like 5 years old, like me.
Really?
And we would go to our fields. We had a lot of land. We still have a lot of land. As a matter of fact, my land could feed the entire county of Bergen County with the food that we could raise mm-hmm. on that land. So my deal was to take care of the sheep.
What did you do exactly?
What did I do exactly? We would carry, what I would always carry with me would be an umbrella, a match, and a knife. The umbrella in case of a storm and a, what do you call, the that hits the trees, the cyclone.
Lightning.
So we didn't stay under the tree, so you stood under the umbrella. The match was to start a fire in case a bear or a wolf came by.
So you just gave yourself one?
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, we had a knife so we could go to the neighbor's farmland, get the, what do you call, the lettuce, and get the core out of there so we'd have some lunch. So that's the way. And one time, I don't know what happened, my mother had left some dinars. That was the old revenue at that time when I was there. So it was about 30 dinars. I took it. And my cousin had seen me, so she told my mother, so she ran after me, and I threw it in the bushes. She picked it up, took it back to my mother. So what do I do at night? I come home, I'm afraid she's going to kill me. So I says, Mom, one of your sheep is missing. And this is already 9 o'clock at night. So she says, get out and find it. Don't come back till you do. Now, can you imagine a five-year-old boy going out in darkness looking for a sheep? Well, I found it. When I found it, she said to me, you ever do what you did, I am going to physically murder you. Getting back to my day of birth, my mother gave birth to me on September 19, 1928. She gave birth to me, laid me in a blanket by the field. There, she went back to work the ground.
Wow.
That's the type. My mother was a great lady.
Tell me about her. What was
If she knew how to read and write, she could have been the greatest politician. Like, what was her name from Israel, the first lady?
Oh, Golda Meir.
Golda Meir, the mother type. Mm-hmm. My mother knew so many people. She worked, she cleaned an office. When my father died in 1948 of so-called cancer, he got hurt on a job and the doctors pronounced that he died of cancer, which I suspect very highly. But anyway, my mother started to clean an office and she got a job at the 2 Park Avenue where the United Nations was. And what's his name? Austin was there with the Democrats. Then came, what's his name? Cabot Lodge. And Cabot Lodge was a personal friend of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
She got to be, she didn't know how to speak or write English, but he did, he's the reason that my sister was able to get out of so-called, quote-unquote, that dirty word that I never use, I think it's with a J.
She was able to get out of?
This country that I don't use the word of, I never use it. It's,
yeah, okay.
You know who I'm talking about.
Okay.
So he helped. And my mother used to crochet. My mother was, she could look at you, like the hands were going like this. And she would crochet a cross for the bookmarker and all kinds of things for the table. And she would give this to Cabot Lodge for his Christmas. And he was Episcopalian by birth. I mean, his religion. Mm-hmm. His wife, Emily, was born in Italy, and she was also an Episcopalian. So when Cabot Lodge died, she said, I've sent a mass card. She sent me back a letter. She said, Steve, the cross that your mother crocheted is in the casket with Cabot. Okay. When I die, mine will be with me as well. Now, these are people that are multi-millionaires. I'm a peon from the farm. This was one of the greatest experiences of my mother and my life. Mm-hmm. And when I got here in 1938, mm-hmm. the first thing I started selling was shopping bags.
Well, first, before we get coming here, let's talk about your life in Croatia, finish.
All right, so I would take care of the sheep and the animals, and I would take my books in the afternoon, sit under a tree and learn my lesson for the next day. Mm-hmm. And I never played hooky like they do in this country. And they had a system of grading a child at the end of the season of what marks you get. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1 was the lowest, 2, 3, or 5 is highest. The 3.5 years that I spent in school there before I left for the United States, I got a 5 in every one of them. Mm-hmm. I loved going to school. I had good friends. We used to kid around, play with each other. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago when I went back to that road where I used to walk to school, still the same. Hasn't changed in 60 years.
Well, still. What did you play?
Oh, well, you name it. To picking up a piece of rock and see who could throw it furthest. We play sort of soccer, games, trying to hide and seek with our form of doing it. But we always respected each other. We always knew where someone was because there were dangers there. Even though you had a farm, you still had at that time wild horses running come out of nowhere. You also had bears. That one time, winter time, we must have been hungry, came knocking at the door. My mother opened the door. She took, my God, there was a bear. So she went to the fireplace, took the fire and scared the hell out of them that way. And then, of course, I went to school until I went to the United States. My sister got married St. Stephen's Day, which is the day after Christmas. I celebrate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been in this country for 62 years. I've yet to work on that day. That's my holiday. It's my name day. Mm-hmm. And I respect it, and I continue doing it.
Now, in Croatia, you use name days rather than birthdays?
More so than birthdays. Uh-huh. St. Stephen's Day. But Stephen. My father was Stephen. I'm Stephen. I got a son, Stephen. My brother Mike has a son, Stephen. My sister has a son, Stephen. My brother Joe has a son, Stephen, also. It's a family that mm-hmm. goes on mm-hmm. and on, mm-hmm. and they continue to keep name. And how they recognize it, like they would say, Stephen Basic, son of Stephen. Oh. Not the mother, but the father. Okay. Because that's the way it's written on the tax records or town records, that type of thing.
How about attitudes or ideas that your mother or father had about how you should live, what you should be like, what you should do?
My mother and father taught me one thing. The thing that they taught me is to always be honest. If you're going to do something in life, do it the way the good Lord meant for you to do it. If you're going to buy something in a store, you have a hankering to buy it, don't put it in the house until you can pay for it completely at the time of purchase. And I followed that through all my lifetime. Any time I bought a car, if I couldn't pay cash for it, I would not buy it. Mm-hmm. If I couldn't buy a fixture in the house, the same way, refrigerator, things like this. If I couldn't afford a vacation, I wouldn't go on it.
Do you think that comes from the fact of, like, being an immigrant, that, you know,
I think it comes from, because this was the custom of your most European countries. That you don't go into something. I would think the majority of people, I don't say all of them, mm-hmm. but I would think they felt that way. Now, I met a young fellow by the name of Johnny Celestia. He looks like Phil Rizzuto. He and I started working together, and I was a young man in the curtain drapery business. And he said to me one day at lunch, he said, Steve, how do you pay your bills? So I tell him, pay the telephone, pay this. He said, no. He said, this way you got to pay your bills. First, you pay yourself first. I said, what are you talking about? He said, take at least 10% of your salary, pay yourself, put it, invest it. Mm-hmm. Invest it. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And thank the good Lord, I'm now 71 years old. By doing that, I've been able to take myself that I have a nice retirement. Mm. And of course, one thing, I lost my pension in 1980, my company went Chapter 11. And what they did, they stole our pension trying to build the business back up. And it was at the time, in 1980, you can't do that anymore. They passed the law. But this would happen in 76. Mm. But that's yesterday's news. Mm-hmm. Hey, it wasn't meant to be.
Can't cry over spilled milk.
So, since you're zone, I mean, what could you do about it? It's over and done. And if I have to go to work again, as I told you, I started shining shoes, selling shopping bags. I wouldn't be ashamed to go right now on 261 Fifth Avenue, where I was known as one of the top salesmen in the drapery industry, to stand right outside and shine shoes to the guys coming out. Because I am not that proud that I'm going to, and I refuse. I was sick in California for 6.5 months. I did not go on, check that unemployment. I refuse to do it because I do not want anything for nothing. Anything I have in my life, including my house. I bought a house for my wife before I married her. She had a house to walk into. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the way I am. Now, I don't say that everybody's like that. Paul is a little different than I am. We are so much alike in so many things that we, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Tell me the part that your religion played when you were growing up in Croatia.
Well, religion in Croatia was that we would go to Mass every Sunday. I remember we'd go to Holy Communion and we used to get a sugar in the hard sugar, you hold it, it would melt in your hand if you carried it, so you used to tie it in a handkerchief, a mint-like.
Yeah.
So I would go to Holy Communion, all the kids would be on the altar, we'd sit on there, go to communion, we'd come out, and we'd have our sugar, because you're not supposed to, God forbid, you're spitting out the Holy Eucharist. So that's the way with that. And God forbid you should miss Mass, you'd get it not just from the priest, you get it from your mother and your friends. I mean, this was the, and the event was, after we got out of church, all the young people, the teenagers and up, would start the different color groups, like the horror in Jewish, you know, the round dances, mm-hmm. and the Croatian tamborica would start playing, the kids would start. It was the most fantastic thing that I remember, mm-hmm. the joy that we had of people, meeting people, and the girls and boys walking away, or you know, the growing up of life. Mm-hmm. It was there, you could see it. Mm-hmm. As far as seeing various things, we had animals, so we were not even told what to do when we were teenagers. We learned naturally mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. from seeing what was going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a good way of explaining, but that's really what happened.
I understand. So was everybody you knew in Croatia Catholic?
Yes. Uh-huh. 99%. At the time I was there, it was 99% Catholic. Mm-hmm. Today it might be 90. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay? And 10% because a lot of the new faiths, like the Seventh-day Adventists, they try to come to my house. I'll give you an example. I went to do my family tree with the Mormon church up in Oradell. Mm-hmm. I walked in there. Yeah, you've known me for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. You know I like to kid around. Mm-hmm. The first thing I said, I walked in, the lady in charge, I said, lady, I want to tell you something before you go any further. First of all, I'm a Roman Catholic, and I intend to stay that way. My mother and father were Roman Catholics. My grandfather was Roman Catholic. All the way back to the 15th century, we were Roman Catholics. Don't try to change me. Now let's get to busy work. Comes Christmas time, there were other kinds of people there. That came continuously. I'm the only one who brought a bottle whiskey, mm-hmm. and a box of chocolates and cookies. And do you know what the lady in charge said to me? She said, Steve, I think I'll become a Catholic. You understand what I'm saying? But that's the way I am. Uh-huh. This is what I learned from when people that were in Europe under communism. The kind of family that I had, Mom and I, we weren't rich. She was making $20, $30 a month at that time, cleaning an office. I was making $35 in the drapery business as a clerk. But we never sent a letter to the old country without at least a dollar in it. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So they would be able to buy something, just to have it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Why don't you tell some experience with your mother in Croatia, between the time up till you were nine?
Well, I'll give you an example.
It gives a flavor.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I was in school, and my mother went to Gorce, which was the main next town over, which is big, twice as big as where the little village, the town that we live in. Now, we didn't live in town. We lived on the farm outside of the city. So I decided I'm going to wait at the bakery store where she would always stop when she got off the train from Gorswich. Now, this is I get out of school at 4 o'clock. It's already 8 o'clock at night. No mom. So I said, well, boy, I don't know if she's coming or not. I better start going. So this is my first trip at night by myself. It's wintertime.
How old are you here?
I'm maybe 8 in the wintertime, and I'm going across this field, the bridge that always the gypsies used to steal the wood, because every time we put the bridge, they didn't want to go cut the wood, so they'd steal the wood from the bridge. They had one left, so you make sure that you didn't fall into the water. So as I'm walking in this wintertime, mom is still up in the Gorspitch. I'm shaking, I'm scared. All of a sudden, my little dog shows up. I felt like $1 million. So he and I are walking on the road home, and I look across the field there, and I see a scarecrow. I said, this is wintertime. What the hell's there? It's summertime you have because of the birds, right? I walk over, there's my brother Mike, frozen. It was so cold, he froze. He couldn't move. So I ran home, and by that time, I didn't realize my mother had gone the other way. She was home already. So she came back, and we got him into the house, and we took out the schliwitz and started rubbing it all over him, because it's made out of plum brandy, plums. So we put that on him, and he came. And Mike survived everything. I mean, he was in the Second World War. He was in charge of a 105 howitzer gun. He's sitting there, five guys around him. The bomber drops there. All the five guys are killed. He's the only one alive. He didn't have a scratch on him all the entire war. He was so blessed. And he came home. I went to see him after my mother died. I wanted to sit in the car with him and go to Vancouver to see some cousins, relations, friends that we knew all over Canada, Boise, Idaho, places like that. He falls down. He had a 7-acre place. He had two horses in the back. He gets up in the morning to feed him, and it was so wet, he slid down. He broke his leg or ankle, whatever it was. So he goes to the hospital. First time in his life he was in the hospital. He's 7 years old. And the doctor says, who set this? He set his own leg in a car.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is... And yeah. he just put a little thing, tape on there to keep it going. In a couple of weeks, he was brand new.
Yeah.
So that's... Okay. I mean, that's the way it was.
Yeah. Now, did you say that your father came here before the rest of the family?
Yes, my father came here twice. First.
When did he come first?
1923. He was coming here to see his father, who was here already. And he missed him by about 10 days to 2 weeks.
Now, is his father, is your grandfather that you were talking
Mike,
about?
Mike, the one who was the foreman for Walsh Construction, yes.
Okay, so your father came in 23.
Right.
And what did he do when he was here?
Worked hard, construction work.
Under his own father?
No.
No?
No, his father died. So when he came here, there were Croatian people here from the same village. So he went to them, and that's how they got a job. My father worked for, when I came from 1938, he was one of the workers who built the Lincoln Tunnel. He dug out the Lincoln Tunnel. They were called groundhogs. He would get up at 6 in the morning and come home at 6 at night, black as an ace of spades when he came home, for $20 a week. And when we came here, we came to a 2.5-room cold water flat. We had no hot water.
Well, when your father was here in 1923, he stayed how long?
5 years.
And then he went back, and then you were born.
Right, 1928, right.
And then he came again?
No, that was it.
He
died here in this country. He's buried in Long Island.
Did he come back to this country with you?
No. He was here when we came.
Okay, so after you were born.
Right.
He came back?
He went back.
He came
back there in 27 for Christmas. After New Year, 28, he went back.
I see. And then he was here when you
came? He was here when I came. When I saw him, he was tall, dark. And I said, my God, who's that ugly man? First time I'd ever seen him. My mother said, that's your father. So... What can I tell you? And mom was kept on the island here for 5 days.
Okay, well, first just tell me, how come you, when you came here, who did you come here with?
My mother.
Just your mother. Okay, were you an only child?
No, I was the youngest.
You were the youngest of
how many? Four. My sister got married. My brother Joe, he wanted to come, but my mother wanted him to stay on the land. And my brother Mike was an apprentice. You know, when you send away to the different family to learn the trade?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what he was doing at the time. When
where did he? What did he do? What?
Well, he was learning to be a tinsmith in Slavonia, which is a northeastern part of mm-hmm. Croatia, which could feed all of Europe with the land that it's got. Mm-hmm. It's got the most wonderful Riesling grapes mm-hmm. to make wine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my father's sister still lives there, in that area.
Just before we leave talking about Croatia, what about gypsies? Do you have any
with
experiences?
Cigani, we call them Cigani.
How do you spell that?
C-I-G-A-N-I. Uh-huh. The way it's pronounced, Cigani. Uh-huh. That's the way it's... Most Croatian words, like if you want to hear a word, beba. How would you spell that? I gave it to you a word. Beba. B-E-B-A. That's the way... Uh-huh. It's so easy to learn uh-huh. the Croatian language. Uh-huh. We had gypsies on our land. My mother allowed them to, they built a shack and they stayed on the land. My mother was a godmother to some of their children, so they wouldn't steal from us. She did that because, you see, she was a what they called an American widow. The husband was in America and she was alone by herself. And my mother always got to the point that the neighbors were getting to be painted in the rump. She went and got a gun. And if anyone would come close, she'd, a couple of times, they see it clear. But my mother was a politician.
Did she have to work when your father was here?
Oh, sure. What do you think? How do you think we lived? We had to plant corn. We had potatoes. She planted the plum trees for the Schliwitz to make the brandy. We'd slaughter a pig for the, and we'd dry the food in a house with heat. What do you call those? Where you dry
smokehouse.
We had one of those. And by the way, I'll tell you a little story. I'm a little baby sitting on a tree, 1-2 years old. You know how the kids are, right? And I fall asleep there by the tree. And a snake came around and wrapped herself around my neck. And I had this cat who I fed like I did with myself. She came over, grabbed her by the head and pulled it off me. Well, you know how you boil milk, you know the cream rises to the top? I used to give that to the cat. That cat was, do you know, if I can walk into your house, if you had a cat, that cat will come to me. Because they smell me, they know that I love cats.
Yes, uh-huh.
My daughter's in-laws, they had a cat for 20 years. She wouldn't go to anybody. Christmas time came in the house, she jumped right on my lap. The guy says, I don't believe it. I said, cats like me, dogs don't. So that's another thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So why did your mother... And your mother come here
because it got to the point that the kids couldn't go to school, which, like my brother Joe, was stuck with the public school, and that was it. My brother Mike, it cost a lot of money to send him to school, to this trade school, to learn the tinsmith. My sister got married rather young, 17, which she shouldn't have. She wanted to see the life a little more. By the way, she saved her life. Where Paul lives, down in the city of Senj, S-E-N-J, that area, 1937, a group of Croatian young men, it was a holiday, they decided to go down to Senj in a horse and wagon. I think it was about 10 horse and wagons. And they decided to go down to Senj to celebrate on their way home. The Yugoslav gendarmes opened up fire, killed 7 of them. 2 of my cousins were killed. My sister was supposed to be on that trip. She missed it by 30 minutes because she didn't get there in time. And when I saw that funeral in 1937, and what they did, they cut the temple of a girl by machine gun wire. The only crime they did was to sing a Croatian song. That was the only crime that they committed. This is 1937. And people say to me, why are you such a Croatian all these years? I mean, I've been here, I was 9 and a half when I left it, right? Why are you so much for Croatia? Well, I remember an old man that I met from my area. He was put in jail in 1940 because Croatians were on the side of the fascists, mm-hmm. Hitler. Mm-hmm. And they declared war on the United States. So he was in charge of one of our Croatian clubs. He was put in jail. So he comes up before the judge and he speaks broken English. So he said, Anthony, why are you so much for your Croatia? So he says, Judge, I'm going to say it. Maybe you understand and maybe you don't, but I think you will. He says, Croatia is my mother. America is my wife. I can always change my wife, but I can never change my mother. Nicely said, mm-hmm. without hurting anybody. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have been in fighting for Croatia to the point that I could have gone back to Croatia in 45 because I speak English fairly well, I would think. Mm-hmm. I could get away with it. Mm-hmm. But if I saw that thing that killed 28 of my family in that war, I'd go with bananas. So I didn't go. And I waited until Croatia became on the map, the world map, Croatia. Mm-hmm. That's when I went back 2 years ago. And I went back to the places where I went to school. As I said to you privately before, I couldn't see all my land because the Serbs had left all the landmines on my property. Not all the people in that area, but the people that they knew were Croatian. 100. They knew everything. They had everything. And then recently, a friend of mine, a cousin, distant cousin, went to hometown. He's reading a book, and he comes upon a list. And it's a list by village of that area where we come from, Perušić, who got killed and when and where. I look at my village, the third name on the list is my brother Joe. I was sick. I mean, I don't know, even though after all these years, he's sick. I still don't know where his grave is. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish.
What is it? Can you say what it is about the Serbs and the Croatians that
the Serbs want
keep it?
The
keep
Serbs
it?
Are a people. If they, I've met a lot of Serbs. I know a lot of Serbs. The Serb that lives in Serbia, I give him 1,000% credit. I have nothing against him. But the Serb that comes to my country, Croatia, and takes over all the police in Perušić, where I was born, 1938, were not Croatian. They were Serbs. Okay? They come over. If they bought a property, you live in Manhattan, lower downtown, mm-hmm. South Street. What's the next street over? Give me a... Or if they move next door to you. Mm-hmm. South Street is Manhattan, New York City, good old USA, correct? Mm-hmm. If they moved in, it would be South Street, Belgrade, Serbia. In other words, they seem to want to take things that don't belong to them. Perfect example, you've heard of Nikola Tesla, have you not? Tesla was a genius in Edison. He created the electric generator so electricity could flow. He was born in the village of Smiljan, S-M-I-L-J-A-N, 7 kilometers from my hometown. Elizabeth Dalich Bentley, who was a congresswoman from Baltimore, Maryland, brought out a statement about Tesla that he was born in Smiljan, Serbia. In the United States Congress. Now, what do you do about this? Who do you see? I mean, why should we have... today even the Croatian language is written as Serbo-Croatian, not Croatian. There's no such thing as Serbo-Croatian. If I wrote to you right now, Steve, in Serbian, and I write in Croatian, you tell me the truth if it's the same thing. Take a look. Now you tell me if it's the same language.
No.
I mean, what are we trying to prove? Mm-hmm. And we seem to be like the scapegoats. They forgave Hitler and Germans for what they did in the war. They were open trade and all this. But I mean, we're the last people in Europe to get... And when we did get our... You know what President Bush said when this war started? Mm-hmm. He said, we are interested in keeping the borders of Yugoslavia the way they are. That was his answer to the war that broke out in 91. Mm-hmm. I mean... You go down the line. I really don't know what to say anymore. I mean, it's given me a different perspective on a lot of things.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, I used to trust people. I used to take them at their word. Mm-hmm. I did a deal with who was a congressman at the time, now Senator Torricelli from New Jersey. I went to a meeting, all of us Croatian, when the war started, what we could do to help. That was the point of the thing. Mm-hmm. He all helped me, whatever you want. But he forgot one thing. You see, I went there with a tape recorder. And I recorded everything he said. Mm-hmm. And he said, in 3 weeks, we'll get together and we'll do it. Took 3.5 months to get it together. And when we did get back together, 3 months, he said something completely different what he said that time. So I got up, I said, senator or congressman at the time. Mm-hmm. I said, Congressman Torricelli, would you like to hear what you said? He walked out of the room. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I learned, you know, if you don't do it yourself, basically it doesn't get done. And I've learned also that a lot of people don't really care about what your problem is, just like a lot of people don't care about the Jewish problem. I understand it fully because I lived that kind of life in the old country. Mm-hmm. Because there are people out there that just are takers completely. I'm a giver. You need anything? God forbid you should do. Hey, you got my home address. Give me a call if I can help you. I'm there. Even when we got together the other day, you didn't believe I was going to call you back, did you? Mm-hmm. But I did call you. Mm-hmm. But you know what I said to you? I said, I will call you. Mm-hmm. I could not go back on my word because it would be a slap in my face. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a good way of explaining it.
Yeah, that's a good way.
But just to get back, I just want to tell you one thing. Yeah. When I started in this country, I came 9.5 years old. Mm-hmm. They put me next to a girl who was half Croatian, half Slovak. Mm-hmm. And Mary Brajca, B-R-A-J-A-C-A. Father was Croatian, mother was Slovak. And I learned through her, I picked up the language. When this was 38, May of 38. In January of 43, I graduated public school. I got the top honors of any kid in that class. There was five of us. There was a Chinese boy, a Greek boy, Italian boy, and myself, four. George Bayless was the Greek. Ben Chin was the Chinaman. Italo Blondi was Italian. And Steve Basic was Croatian. We got all the medals in that class. Not one American born had over 80 average. We all had 99.9. And we all came from Europe.
What do you think it is about? You think it's the
It's the drive to become better than you are because you have lived so damn low that you want to build yourself up. It's the human nature driving. It should be in everybody. Mm-hmm. It should be in anybody, any race. I really, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then we went to high school. I went to Straubman Mueller Textile High. I took up buying and selling. I didn't know what else to take because that's what I took. And then I got sick. I had, these glands in the throat here. Mm. And I was out of school for almost 5 months. Mm. Came back, I asked the teacher, I'd like all the lessons that I missed. And I had it up to here. 1 month I came back, I was one of the top students when we graduated. Mm-hmm. Took me a month to do it because I set my mind to it. And also to help my mother and father. I went to the doctor, told him I didn't feel too good, and this was kidding around. And it wasn't true, basically. I was fit as a fiddle. But I made him say that because of the glands, I couldn't work. So I got out of school. I'd go in at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'd get out at 12 o'clock. Then I'd go work as a part-timer in a book bindery as a delivery boy, part-time, making $60 a week after high school in 1943 when the war was on. Mm-hmm. I made more money than my father did. Mm-hmm. But you know something? I never went to school that I didn't stay at night and finish my homework. Not one. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, I was still there. And I had this buddy who's still my buddy to this day, Italian boy by name of Nello Orlandi. Nello and I went to public school together. We went to the same school together, high school. And his idea, he would go out and play ball. And next morning, Steve basically would bring in the homework and he'd take it and copy it. So one morning, I guess a couple of times, I didn't feel so good. I said, I'm not giving it to you. You know, he quit school the next day. Mm-hmm. And he went to work for Mercado Elevator Company. He's got a better pension than I do today. So you tell me, what's the truth? You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right. Now let's go back to coming here.
Yeah.
You and your mother.
Right.
Right? Okay. Remember leaving Croatia?
Yes.
Was it like?
It was south.
Dubai.
To me, I was the happiest kid in the world because I was going to America because I heard so many stories.
What did you hear? What did
I
you
heard
think
it's
you were
a.
Gonna
It was like Hollywood. It was like Alice in Wonderland. It was a musical like Rosemary with Jenny McDonald and Nelson Eddy. Happy. And I was going to see my father for the first time also. That was another thing. And the sadness was when my brother Joe, who got the one who we don't know about, he was holding on to the train and he was cursing my mother out. He says, I'll never see you again as long as... No truer words were said. And we got here, and it was a joy of something new. And then we got to Paris, France. This is beautiful. We get there, we're supposed to take the French line. I don't know if I told you, they had three boats. They had the Lafayette, which was on fire, burned, couldn't go. Champlain was on strike. And they had the Paris, which was the smallest ship in the French line. Took 15 days to cross.
Wait, I thought you went on the Normandy.
Well, let me tell you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Paris, which was, so they said, do you want to go on the Paris, or do you want to wait here a week and take the Normandy and be there in 5 days? We said, we'll stay in Le Havre for 5 days, for a week to 10 days, and we'll take the Normandy. So the lady that was working for the French line in the kitchen fell in love with me. She wanted to buy me from my mother. And she took me all over the area to show me various things. And my mother got scared one day, but she brought me back.
You mean literally she wanted to buy
me? She wanted to buy me.
She wanted to give your mother money?
She wanted to give my mother money to buy me.
Wow.
So she took me on to the Louvre, where the famous wine is made by the B&B Benedictine, things like that. And what I remember as a child, the beautiful countryside, the bus is going very fast. You know how buses go. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy on a bicycle passing him. By Robert? I mean, I could just see those two bicyclists going past us. I said, what kind of bicycles do they have? And the thing that surprised me the most is when I got here to the United States, I went to the movies. First time in my life, I had never been to a movie. And then what I saw was a Western. And the guy's shooting like this, and I'm ducking. And I got to be a movie buff to the point that today, you want to know anything about American Westerns, I could tell you the history of practically every one of them.
Do you think those movies that you saw when you first came here and you were so impressionable and liked them so much, do you think they have had an effect on you in the way you think?
Oh, yes, very much.
In what way?
Very much so. As a matter of fact, I would look and see that the old Western, the guy with the white hat was the good guy, and the guy with the black hat was the bad guy. And there was always some problem that was ironed out, not by murder, but by resolve. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, Mom and I and my brother Mike, one time in 41, I guess, it was winter time like crazy. Snow was 10 feet inches in Manhattan, in Hell's Kitchen. So we lived on 50th Street. So the movie was on where the Port Authority is, the old arena. The arena was the name of the theater. Mm-hmm. And we walked down there. We went to see a movie with George Houston, born in Flemington, New Jersey, a baritone singer who was the Lone Rider of the Plains. And we went to see this because of George Houston. And we came out of the movie happy and snowed like crazy. We didn't mind it a bit because the three of us went out and had a good time. Mm-hmm. For lousy 30 cents, that was the entrance to the movie at the time, 10 cents each.
Wow. Okay, so after you were in Le Havre and you finally got...
On the boat. One thing I remember about the Normandy ship was we're in the middle of the ocean, and is it because I was young? That the impression was so, but the waves, when we were in the middle of the ocean, the waves, I said, oh my God, I said, if we blow, I said, we've had it. And the waves came up to the third deck. Mm-hmm. And I remember running from one side to the other. And one thing that I did also was use the elevator. I had never used an elevator in my life. I would go up and down the elevator.
On the ship?
On the ship. And then one time I remember seeing a white man with a black woman. I had never seen a black woman in my life. Never. I didn't even know that they existed. And I went back to my mother. I said, how did she get so black? Did she stay in the sun all day or what? That was the answer. And my mother didn't know either because she never didn't know how to read. She never knew about them either. I mean, who's going to talk about Africa on a farm in the old country?
Yeah.
I remember those two things vividly.
Yeah. Do you remember when the Normandy came into the New York
Harbor? I remember docking. I remember coming, seeing when they said, there's the land. I ran to the top deck. I saw the Statue of Liberty. I saw the New York Harbor.
Did you know what the Statue of Liberty was?
Yes. As a matter of fact, speaking about that, when I got here, I met a girl by the name of Helen. And I said to Helen, she was Croatian. I said to her, Helen, born here, though. I says, what's the capital of Montana? She says, Wyoming. I says, you idiot, it's Helena. Like your first name. We knew in Europe, we knew the capital of every state in the United States before we came here. Mm-hmm. We took on foreign projects. Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, the people wouldn't know them.
They didn't know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you saw the Statue of Liberty and you knew...
Oh, yeah, I knew what it was. I knew because we read about it in the old country. Because they had, especially on America, they would feature certain things, certain parts of history we would learn in the old country about the United States. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because America was number one on the list for everyone in that part of the country. Because we could not, we were our own, we were born Croatians. Mm-hmm. But we could not exercise our rights to be printers, grocery store owners, writers. We had to leave the country because that was the only way we could. So, and the women that were left, single girls, if they didn't marry by the age of 18, 19, they married a Serb. If they didn't have a Croatian, intermarry. That's what they were trying to do by marriages.
Why would they not marry Croatian after?
There wasn't any more because the majority of young men left the country. Like they went to America or Canada. Argentina was a big country that they went to. South America, a lot of the countries. Like my wife's two uncles, they went down to South America. I'll give you an example. I got a friend up in Albany, New York, a little town called Selkirk. Her name is Zupan. She came here when she was 16 years old, married a guy who was 15 years older than her, Nick Zupan. She had two brothers that she had never seen. They had gone to America before she was born. They lived in Granite City, Illinois. In all the years that she's been here, now she's 90 years old, they both died, she never saw them. And I asked her, I just happened to be up there a couple of months ago, and I said, Teta Anka, which is aunt, I said, how come you, he said, it got to the point that I was too busy raising a family here. My husband got hurt, which he did on a job, broke his arm, and he started a new business, he had to do this, and he never got to it, and every time he wanted to do it, something else came up. So can you imagine having two brothers that you never even saw? And this is typical. I mean, like my two grandparents, I never saw them. My two grandmothers, I don't remember because my father's mother died early. My mother's mother died when I was about 2 years old. I don't remember. I'm sure she saw me. And I just saw my brother, my father's sister. She left my town when I was a year old. So when she saw me, oh God, it was like my mother came from the grave.
No.
You know what she said to my brother, Mike? Mm-hmm. And Mike is taller than I am. So she says, Mike, in Croatian, she said, Mike, she says, you're not doing anything. Why don't you go get the stepladder, climb that tree, and get some of those fresh cherries for little Stevie here? And Mike kept saying, he says, but I'm Mike. Yeah, he says, but you're big, Mike. Joking around, this is it. Yeah. And we had a family member from another part of the family who moved to Boise, Idaho. And when he was in the old country, they would call him, his name is John, Ivan, and they would call him Ivčina. That was a nickname. Mm-hmm. Ivčina, what did you have for breakfast? Križaka, which is crossed muffin, like made
like
in
like buns?
No. Buns, like buns with a cross. What did you have for lunch? For breakfast, he had križaka. What did you have for lunch? Križaka. He added a couple of syllables to it. Then he says, what do you have for supper? Isti vrago, the same devil. In Croatian, it's funny.
Uh-huh.
The reason I said this is to show you how translations can sometimes lose what they were intended to say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the cousin that just died in Cleveland by marriage, when his father and mother came to to Ellis Island, their name was Malon, M-A-L-O-N, which is Russian. It's a Russian name. When they got off the banana boat, off the island, it was Maloney.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he died as a Maloney. He never changed it. Uh-huh. Because majority of people, they thought when they got the official documents, Maloney, they'd have to go, they would be in trouble if they used any other name.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So tell me about you coming to Ellis Island. What was your impression?
Oh, they treated me like a million bucks. They had an agent here who spoke Croatian beautifully. Mm-hmm. They took my mother away because she didn't feel well for 5 days, and I stayed for two.
Did you know where your mother was going?
Well,
was
he told me. I didn't know till the agent told me. He says, came over to me. He says, Steve, don't worry about it. Your mother's going to see the doctor. She's going to be sleeping there for a couple of days. They're going to take tests, and you'll be here. And besides, he says, your father will be here tomorrow. He'll take you home.
Now, what was wrong with your mother?
Well, Mom was just on the start of cancer. And they checked her out, and it wasn't that far gone. But thank God she found a fantastic Jewish doctor. Dr. Schwarzfarb. He took her and he on the operating table in 1938, and she came home and caught it in time. And she was She was forever grateful. What she did for Lodge, she did for Dr. Schwarzwald till the day he died. She was like family. We were like family. He was up on Nelson Avenue, up in the Bronx, and I used to take her up there. And when I had these glints, getting back to my thing, I went to Dr. Schwarzwald, and he says, Steve, I'll take care of it. He says, what you got to do is come and see me every day for 21 days. And I'm going to give you a new medicine that they just brought out in the government. It was penicillin. And he treated me that way, and it cleared up, because I was ashamed to go within the young crowd. You know how you are, 14 years old. You're trying to make an impression on somebody, and you've got the glands, and you're out of whack, things like that. But he's the one who helped me. Wow. And Mom kept in touch with him until the day he died, my mother. She was a... You would have loved my mother.
Yeah, she sounds good. Wait, now, if you were Croatian at the time of World War II, allied with Germany.
Exactly. Right? The reason we did this...
Were you anti-Semitic?
No. None whatsoever. As a matter of fact,
how could that be, though?
Very easily. I'll tell you why. We would have gone with the devil just to get away from the Serb. You got to understand that. Mm-hmm. So we took the easy way out with the Germany. We were a free nation amongst the so-called fascist states. The Croatian army never left their borders. They protected their homeland. They never went across the border into Serbia. Okay? To understand why Croatians were not anti-Semitic, just one little story. Dr. Ante Pavlic, who was a Croatian leader, was married to a Croatian Jew from Zagreb. They had three children, two girls and a boy. Now, if he was married to a Jew, does it make any sense that he would be anti-Semitic, that he would kill people? You see, if you want to know something about Croatia, just go to Washington and listen to the tape recording that the old administration from Belgrade is still issuing out of lies, when the lies are that the Croatians killed millions of Gypsies, Serbs, and Jews. Mm-hmm. That's the saying since 1945, mm-hmm. continuously. And when I'm in this country, when I became 21 years old, I became an American citizen. I went out for the papers. And they denied me my right to put my nationality on my paper. So I told the judge who gave me the paper, and I said, I'm taking this under duress. I am not accepting this as a true American. Mm-hmm. To this day, it's that way. So when the Croatia became free, they had put originally Yugoslavia, and I went back to the guy. I said, get that dirty name off my paper. I'm going to burn it right here. On my passport, it says Croatian, 1,000%. Mm-hmm. Now, you might say, why do I feel like this? Because I've seen the sufferings of people that came here. Paul came here without a dime. He was a guy like, there weren't many guys like me who took guys into their house. I went out and got him a job. Mm-hmm. I went, look, I had this Polish friend that we grew up together. When he got out of high school, he had a bad operation when he was a kid, so he was a little backward. He was afraid to go in and look for a job. I went on 42nd Street, right on when you get out of the Lincoln Tunnel. There was a building there I went from the top floor down to the bottom. There was five floors. On the third floor, I found him a job as a delivery boy. Mm-hmm. Just the way we were. Mm-hmm. We were go-getters. I mean, if I didn't have a buck for the movie, Henry had it. And if Henry didn't have it, Aldo had it, or Nello, or Frankie. I mean, we were like brothers. And to this day, we're still like brothers.
Now, you're not talking simply of Croatians.
No, I have friends, all kinds of... I got a friend, Harry Bergen, calls me for every Christmas. Merry Christmas to you. I mean, I got a friend of mine that I used to sell when I was in the drapery business. I traveled the entire Southeast. There's a tremendous amount of Jewish business owners throughout the entire Southeast. Tremendous amount. In the Shmata rag business, textiles. I got to be friends. I lost one. I'll give you an example. Clinton, South Carolina. It's a Saturday night. I'm going to the carnival and the P game. In a half an hour, I lost $1,000. That's all the money I had. Now, if I call my mother, she's going to kill me. So I call up Izzy Bernstein. His real name is Israel. They called him Izzy. I tell him, I said, I got robbed. I didn't want to tell him what happened. Steve, how much you need? I said, $1,000. He sends it by Western Union, I get the check, and I tell him, I said, when I get back, So I get back after 2 months traveling throughout the South, I come back to Norfolk, and I tell him what happened. He says to me, Steve, you do this one more time. Don't ever come into my place again. He says, and this is my biggest account I had in the Southeast, the best one. You don't do that again. He cured me of it, okay? Mm. And to this day, hey, when we see each other, like long-lost brothers. Mm. I mean, I have all kinds of friends. I had a guy by the name of Herman S. Danzig. We called him High. Everybody thought he was a nut. Everybody thought he was a nut. He was a nervous wreck. He was working in Cleveland, Ohio, Indiana territory, so they transferred him to my territory. So he comes over to me, he says, I'm High Danzig. I know you. I said, I'm Steve. He says, he was basically feeling me out if I would help him. So I says, he says, when are you going south? I said, I'm going June 6th. He said, we'll meet here and here, just follow me. We get to town, we spend the night together in the hotel. Then I would talk to him, I said, look, this is where I sell. I gave him a list of every one account I had. You walk in there, you tell him that you're my friend. He got orders in every place he went. And the guys came to me, when I came through later myself, they said, thank you for sending that customer, he's got some fantastic. Why did I send him? I sent him to help him out, number one, but also he had a good product. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I knew that it wouldn't hurt the people that I was selling.
Right.
Like the Millen shops. I don't know if you ever heard of the Millen shops? It's a chain of family that started in New Haven, Connecticut. They had managers all over the United States. When these guys were coming to New York, they wouldn't come and ask for their salesman, who majority of them were Jewish. They'd ask for Steve Basic, the Croatia Cup. Why? Because they knew that Steve Basic would give them the patterns that they would sell. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason for that business, basically, is you don't want to sell them something that's not going to turn over. Yeah. You want to make sure that the material that you sell them will turn over four, five, six, seven, eight times. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you make them up, you make a profit. And that was the name of the business. Hey, how to make a buck.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to pause here. I want to change the tape. Okay, we're continuing here with tape two, and I'm speaking with Steve Basic. Okay, let's just follow through here. Is there anything else about Ellis Island, Steve, that you can remember?
The food was good.
Yeah.
The sleeping quarters were clean. The people were nice. They made you feel at home.
Was it very crowded?
Yes.
And what other, did you see people who were either detained here?
Well, I didn't know what detainment meant. I really didn't know.
Yeah.
But I did see people that I saw on the boat. Now, I don't understand. My father bought us a ticket that had a private room. We didn't share it with anybody.
Oh.
How we got to Ellis Island, I don't know. Maybe it was the class where we were in, because they started with the top deck all the way down. We were almost down with sea level in the room that we had.
Hmm.
So when I would look out the window, I could see the water. And when the wave would come, you make sure it was closed.
Yeah. And tell me about meeting your father.
Well, we got to, first time I saw him was when we got up to what do you call, 49th Street, the French Line dock on 12th Avenue. And my mother was standing there. We didn't get to Ellis Island yet. They didn't take us out yet till we got to the dock. So my mother's looking around and she says, there's your father. And look, there's a man with a hat on. And my father was a distinguished looking, as a matter of fact, I brought a picture I wanted to show you what he looked like. Mm-hmm. My father was a good looking man, but he was strange to me because I had grown up with one parent. It was hard for me to acclimate myself to him, and I think it was the same thing with him to take on a child that he never saw. Mm-hmm. And of course, he had different ideas. He hated movies. He would rather go visit his cousin John, Cousin Martin or Cousin Joe. That was more important to him than to go to a movie. As a matter of fact, we took him to a movie one time, the old Capitol Theater on 50th Street and Broadway. And he says, in 5 minutes of the movie, he says, I got to go to the bathroom. We're sitting there, hours passed by. He's gone. He's home. He didn't say goodbye or nothing. So that's it. But we got to know each other pretty well. As a matter of fact, when my father had this, he got hurt on a job. They were expanding the subway system in New York.
So he worked building the Lincoln Tunnel, but that was before.
He was, right.
And when you came, what was he doing?
He was working for construction work. And then the war broke out. He went to work in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Mm-hmm. He worked on the, what was the big Arizona, was it? The big battleship? Mm-hmm. He did that. And then he started after the war working the subway, doing the same union, same work. And the rocks fell on him. They were expanding here, and he was sitting for coffee. The rocks came tumbling down. He jumped and pushed three black men to safety. As a result, he broke his hip, and his stomach went this high. Mm-hmm. Blew up completely. But he was sick after that, and then he went to operation, and he died on the operating table. And I went to the hospital up on 50th Street, 9th Avenue, I forget the name of it, Polyclinic, I think. So I walked in, and I said, where's my father? And the doctor said, he's deceased, and I didn't know what the word meant. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know. So I said, what does that mean? And when I said that to him, he was sort of uneasily said, well, he's dead. And it was a very cold, eerie feeling went through me. So he was 52 years old. I called my mother up, and she came down, and that. And what can I tell you?
How old were you then?
1948, I was going in my 28th year. And so because of that, I was going to go to college, but when he got hurt, I felt it was my responsibility to join in to support the family. Mm. So when he died, I made a vow on his deathbed that as long as I'm alive, his wife, my mother, would never be in need of anything as long as I'm alive. Mm-hmm. And I kept that promise till the last minute of her life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And many people would say, how can you have two women in the house, wife and a mother? Not her mother, but yours. It wasn't easy. I came one time from a trip up to Buffalo, New York. I hit a snowstorm. It took me 36 hours to get home from Buffalo to my house. Got in the house. The two of them were at each other's throat, my mother and my wife. And I walk in. I'm tired. I need a shower. I need sleep. I need a good shot of Schliwitz to fall asleep. And the two of them were arguing, so I didn't say nothing. I just took out the keys to the house and to the car. I said, girls, you want to argue? Here's the keys to the house. I'm leaving. Bye-bye. When I said that, that was the end. If they ever argued afterwards, I never saw it. Never saw it. So that's the way I handled that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was proper or not, but that's the
it worked.
That's right, the important thing.
Okay, so now let's see. So where did you go when you went from Ellis Island?
We went to, my father had a 2.5 room cold water flat at 602 10th Avenue in Manhattan. No heat, no nothing. And it was basically a bedroom. If you walked in, it was his kitchen. You walked, next room, there was no doors. It was like a railroad thing. Bedroom with my mother and father, and there was a living room, which they had a couch, and I slept on the couch, they slept in the bed. If you wanted to go to the bathroom up, pardon me for being, you had to go out in the hallway, you shared it with the next neighbor, who you didn't even know. But it was still better life, in a sense, than any place else, and we were happy.
Do you remember any things in this country, in New York, that struck you early on that was so new and different?
Well, the amount of streetcars, the amount of, they had streetcars in those days, the overhead elevated trains. I learned ice hockey, and we played roller hockey as children, and I got to be such a fanatic at it. To this day, I'm still a Ranger fan, and keep telling people when they say, where'd you lose your hair? When the Rangers won the Cup in 40, and all these years in between. The sporting events I enjoyed. I enjoyed the food, the ice cream, which I didn't have. Sladderled, we used to call ice cream, maybe once a year. I could buy it every day. And I remember going shining shoes, selling shopping bags, whatever. I would go out after school, shine shoes in a bar, and I used to have a Croatian cap on. With a Croatian coat of arms. And there was about 7 or 8 Croatian-owned bars on 10th Avenue, Hell's Kitchen. They would keep all the other kids of different nationalities out till I showed up. And I would shine shoes, and then the shine was a nickel, and the majority of the guys gave me a dime. Mm-hmm. Do you think I spent one of those nickels? I gave every one to my mother, every one I ever made. And this is the way we were raised. And Mom knew what to do with it. She started saving for me for a rainy day. And she did. Mm-hmm. She was a woman of her word. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I started school. I met friends. I met these boys that I grew up with. And we started playing hockey. And when it came, Thanksgiving Day, we'd get up at 6 in the morning until 6 at night. We wouldn't leave the street. We played roller hockey. It was, mm-hmm. This was our entertainment.
Could you describe Hell's Kitchen and the different ethnic groups that live?
Hell's Kitchen, they had an Irish cop, I forget his name, who was drunk 9 times out of 10. When he walked that street, you got out of his way. Otherwise, you feel the shillelagh. And it shows that we, even with all of this, we did not grow up hating cops. To me, I wouldn't do their job for $1 million, and I respect them what they do. That's number one. The people that I met Italians, I met blacks. I had a very close friend, I'll tell you a story about him as well, Robert Wilmer. I met Serbs who were born in Croatia. Because they worked together with my in the job, and that's how they got to know my father. And they came from the same area. So it was like a friendly unfriendliness. Would you call it that way? In other words, it was a fake friendship. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else to say. When they would get together, if they came to your house, they saw a picture of a Croatian leader. How can you have that fascist up there? But they had King Alexander, who killed all the people, Croatian people. That's okay. They could have this. You know what I'm saying? The same old thing going back. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. And I remember a movie I'd go every Saturday. I make sure. By the way, you know how I used to get into movies? There was one Royal Theater on 10th Avenue, 46th Street. There was a big fat lady who was selling the tickets. And she was standing there, and she wore those black shoes like a school teacher. And I'd get my shoeshine box, shine the shoes, leave my shoeshine box there. She's going for nothing. And I'd go in the movie, and I come back out. I'd make $2, and $2.38 was a lot of money. I mean, it was like $20. And I give it to my mother. She said, how's it going? And I would always do some work. My brother Mike would do when he came 9 months later.
Why didn't he come?
Because he was in trade school.
Oh, Tinsmith,
right? Tinsmith, yeah.
Uh-huh. And so then he came?
He came in January the following year, and the two of us got together, and it was much easier because we understood. And my brother Mike is a very quiet, completely different than I am, quiet individual. It'll take a hell of a lot to get him mad. Mm-hmm. But once he get mad, just look at his eyes. Stay the hell away from him. We had the old stove, you know, when you pick up the thing to mm-hmm. put the wood in. I don't know what you would call it. Grate.
They were those iron stones.
So I don't know. I'm sitting in the corner, and I got mad at my brother, and I flung that thing at him. I could have killed him. Mm. My brother Mike didn't do nothing. He just picked me up like this by the hand. He said, "One more time, you're dead. Nothing else." And I kept saying to my, I didn't mean it. I really didn't mean it. It was just a moment, but I said to him, "Well, my God, I could have killed him." Mm-hmm. Another story comes, I'm in the old Madison Square Garden, comes in King Clancy, who's one of the greatest hockey players of Toronto Maple Leafs, happened to be a referee. He did something against the Rangers, so I took a paper and some other stuff, and it was like hard, and I flung it, I missed his head by inches. I could have killed the man from the height, from the height that I threw it. Mm-hmm. And for years I had this guilty feeling about this, and about 25 years ago, my son and I in New York, the New Garden, going to a hockey game, and Goose walking by King Clancy. So I walk over to him, I said, "Mr. Clancy, can I talk to you for a moment?" "Sure, son, little short guy, not even 5'10", 5'5", something like that. I says, I did this. He says, "You didn't hear kill me, did you?" He says, "No, I forgive you." Mm. I felt so like relieved, like $1 million.
So do you throw things at people anymore?
No. Come on. That was the heat of the hockey game.
Right.
I stopped going to the games for the simple reason of the abusive language. There's women sitting there, and the guys are talking dirty. I don't need this. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm a man, too. I mean, I went to games. When a lady walked in, I got up and gave her my seat, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. That's respect. And that's the one thing that's missing with the youth of this country. They don't have any respect for anybody. I mean, when I go on a subway, even today, if I see a woman, I don't care if she's 5 years old, I'll get up and give her a seat. Even though I'm 71, I'll give her the seat. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. Respect. You got to respect women. Mm-hmm. This is the future of the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So getting back to Hell's Kitchen.
We lived there for...
Did you mix? In other words... Like your mother.
Well, the church was...
Did your mother mix with the Irish?
No, they didn't, because their language barrier.
I see.
The language barrier. We basically went... The center of our life was the church. And the Croatian church was up on 50th Street and 11th Avenue. So we'd walk from 10th Avenue, 44th Street to church every Sunday. And I was an altar boy in the church. Then I became a choir singer. I sang in the choir. I was an altar boy until I got taller than the priest, so he kicked me off. He wanted to be, and you know where they have the swinging the incense? Mm-hmm. I'm swinging one time. He just put a new carpet in, and the fire fell out. Oh, yeah. And then there he's stomping out, and he says, he's in the middle of the mass, he says, "Steve, I'll kill you." I said, "No, you won't. I'll run away." And the nun that was there, Sister Anne from the old country, they had the Holy Eucharist, you know, that they drink at the cup out of the, where right. Christ is supposed to be the body of Christ. Uh-huh. And I touched it by like this. She whacked me across the face, you wouldn't believe. I mean, that was the law at that time. Nobody could touch it, not even a nun. You had to have a cloth to hold it. And I didn't, and I touched it by mistake. I didn't do it on purpose, but I got such a whack. To make a long story short, she died about 2 or 3 years ago out in Akron, Ohio. And whenever I was out there, I always took a bottle of booze with me and make sure. I used to say, "Moi Steve," and my Steve, he's the only one who remembers. But we were friends for the life. This is basically most of my, like Paul, I'm sure told you the same thing. That we, once you get a friendship, you don't give it up.
Now, did you have Croatian societies of any kind, or was it mainly the church?
Well, the church was the main thing. We had the Holy Name Society, we had the Sodality, we had the Rosary for the girls and women, Holy Name for the men, and we had a church group that ran the church with the priest. Political thing we didn't go into because the war showed up.
Mm-hmm. How did the war affect you and your family?
Well, it affected me in this respect. My mother and father had borrowed some money from a friend of mine, Radulich Miro, who was a longshoreman and a friend of my father's. He loaned them $500 at that time to be able to bring my brother-in-law and my sister over from the old country. And they were already on April 6th, 1941, in Italy. Next day was Pearl Harbor, right?
Oh, right.
So they had to go back and spend the entire war in Croatia. And then my sister was, when the bombs started dropping, she's in the next city where mom was shopping that night that I told you, in Gospic. She's walking through there, and the bombs had blown up a building. There's a photograph studio. And there's a picture of my mother on the ground. She turns back to pick up the picture. If she had gone up, she would have been dead. The bomb dropped where she turned. Oh, yeah. And then she got into Zagreb during the war, and she became a black marketeer. That's the only way you could survive, to buy things. But of course, with our help, mom and I and my father and my family, we not only helped my sister, we helped anybody we knew who wrote to us from a camp, displaced persons from all over Europe. Mm-hmm. I got a letter home, the history of my hometown that this man wrote. I'm going to donate to the Croatian Society. So it'll be for history. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fantastic. What went on? The Serbs would get dressed in the Croatian uniform and kill their own people and blame the Croats. They did this since this war. Right now, they get dressed up as Muslims killing Muslims. Mm. And they did the same thing with the Croats. They get dressed up as Croatians killing Serbians. They killed their own people just to create a problem. These are sick people. Mm-hmm. By the way, Karl Molden is Serb, so you'll know. His real name is Mladen Stojanovic. That's how he got the Malden, M-A-L-D, from Mladen.
Right.
Yeah?
Okay. Go ahead. Well, why don't you just give me a thumbnail sketch of the rest of your life? In other words,
okay.
You started out in
Hell's
Kitchen.
Let me tell you. When we started in Hell's Kitchen, we lived there, but then we moved up to 50th Street, 406 West 50th Street. From there, we went to 529 West 159th Street. Then we came down to 457 9th Avenue. And how we got to 9th Avenue was this. My mother didn't like 159th Street because she didn't know anybody there. She wanted to move back where the Croatian community was. So a friend was moving to Cleveland, so she says, "I'm the janitor here, you become a janitor." So mom and I became janitor. Pop went to work. At work, he found out that he was moving. She didn't tell him. She was already, and I was the instigator who did all this, make the phone calls, all this. So we moved to 457 9th Avenue. My father went to work, got hurt, died. We lived there. Mom would go to work, clean the office for Cabot Lodge, and she would leave my plate and the dinner, what I should do for dinner. And underneath was a dollar, always, so I could go to a movie if I wanted. I took care of the fire, took heat, the water, took care of the house myself. Mom would work, and we worked it out together.
Did you, excuse me, but because you knew English
yes.
better than
oh,
your mother,
yes.
you, what, did you have to do kind of different jobs for your mother? Sort
well,
of
Mom was able, Mom, whatever she needed to be done, I did, whether she knew how to do it or didn't know how to do it, because she relied on me completely. I mean, I would go to the Franklin Savings Bank, which is now on it used to be on 42nd and 8th Avenue, and the guys knew me. I mean, they walked, hi, Steve, and they knew that I was there to help do my mother's business. I'll give you another story. The post office, the main post office on 34th Street, 33rd and 8th Avenue, we're taking packages to the old country, care packages. My mother's carrying two in her arm, and on top of her head she's carrying, and I'm carrying two, and my brother's carrying two. We get down to the basement where all the business people shipping out parcels. I mean, there's a line out to the street. The guy sees me, and he says to everybody, hold it. The basic family is here. We get to the line. They took our packages and everything, and we go home. Now, why was he so nice to us? The first time we came there, my brother and I brought the packages. We gave him $20 for the postage. At that time, that's what it was. He gives us back a $50 bill in change plus what he thought was a $5 bill. And he gave us 50. We got home. Mike and I looked at it. This man made a mistake. We both got back, walked to the store, walked up to him and said, here's your money back. Mm-hmm. That man never forgot it, a Jewish fellow. Mm-hmm. He never forgot it. While he was there and we brought packages, he treated us like family. So you see, mm-hmm. one hand washes the other. Mm-hmm. Being honest pays in the long run. Mm-hmm. Now, when I first came here, just to give you an idea what type of jobs I had, I worked as selling shopping bags. I'd buy a bag for a penny and sell it for 2 cents. I started shining shoes. I worked in a photo studio, developing pictures in the afternoon, Sunday afternoon after Mass, and I did these things. I don't know if you ever saw this. This is my brother and me. That's when I graduated public school. My brother Mike. While I'm on the pictures, let me show you. Here's another. That's Mike when he graduated high school. That's me when I graduated public school. This is my.
Now, are these color? Are these?
These are photographs that he put on, by some kind of a application.
Mm. Wow,
this
wonderful.
Is Mom and Dad. This is me when I came from the old country, 38.
Oh my goodness! Gee, at some point, maybe I can copy these, put them in your.
Well, I can have pictures home. If you want them, I can get it for you.
Really?
Sure.
Because we keep a file mm-hmm. of extra things, photos and material.
This is me and my wife.
Wow. Who's this?
That's my sister and her husband.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, myself.
Oh, wow.
This is me as an altar boy. And last but not least, this is Dr. Ante Pavlic. That's a Croatian leader. Mm-hmm. He had a fight with a general. My mother and I got them together again. We never met in person ever in our lives, but we got them together.
Really? How'd you do that?
Very simple, by getting on the phone and say, it's wrong what you're doing. Nothing else. Mm-hmm. He said, we're one people. We have to stick together. No matter what it is, you have to eat it. Whatever it is, get over it. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I've done so many things you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's...
So then I'm there taking pictures. Then I get in as a delivery boy for Coty. Remember Coty, the fragrance company?
Oh, yeah.
I was delivery boy. So they used to give me 10 cents for every delivery, for the bus or the subway. So I take 6 deliveries with me, 60 cents. So instead of taking a train, I would walk it. I did all the deliveries by walking. Come back, I found a pickle jar, started putting nickels in there, all the buffalo heads, and I became a coin collector, and my father finds it. So instead of asking me about it, he goes to the bank and gives him the money and opens up a savings account for me. And I blew my stack. I said, what'd you do that for? There's some nickels in there that are worth money. But if I had them today, I'd really be like the 1909 SVDB penny. If you ever get one, don't ever give it up. It's worth, if it's in good condition, a couple of $1,000s. Mm-hmm. That type of thing. So I did this. I became a busboy in a restaurant. I worked in a bookbindery during the war. I was a steward on a dining car. I had 6 jobs after I finished high school. I was going to go to college, like I told you, but Pop got sick, died. So I gave that up and did this. Showroom, I got a job as a typist. Orders. The woman that did it couldn't do it as fast as I did. It took him 2 weeks to do it. I did it in 1 day. Then I became a showroom assistant, a salesman. And then I told you about when this Jewish salesman, Harry Ballin, did I mention it to you? He said to me, Stivala, I'm going to send you down south to be my salesman. Yeah. He says to me, I said, I don't even know how to speak English. He says, don't worry, neither did they. First trip out, I opened up 100 new accounts. Uh-huh. And I was a salesman after that.
Uh-huh. Tell me what your greatest satisfactions have been.
My greatest satisfaction has been to be able to be part of my family, to be able to be there when they needed me, to when Croatia became free and independent, I was the happiest person, although it's not the type of Croatia I want. Mm-hmm. It's still my country, mm-hmm. my origin, where I came from. And anyone that's ashamed of his origin, to me, is not a man. I don't care where you come from. Mm-hmm. I respect all peoples. I don't care whether they're black, yellow, or blue. If I look at a person with my eyes, and if they look at me nice the way I look at them, I have no problem with anybody. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a last story. My mother, she worked for the Cabot Lodge. There was a black man from Aruba by the name of Oscar, Alderman Oscar, God rest his soul. He was a Catholic, like myself. Came to my mother in 1943, says, I got a problem. He says, I need $300. My mother says, this is Friday. He says, Monday, I'll bring it to you. She goes with me to the bank, takes out $300, takes it, gives it to him. When she gives it, he says to her, where's the paper? He said, what paper? He said, the paper that signed that I took the money. My mother goes, phew. And to the day he died, he would come to my house on 9th Avenue all the time. When I got married and moved to Jersey, he never showed up. You know, I asked him, call him one day. He says, Steve, he says, you're living amongst white people. And if I come to your house, I don't want you to have any problem. Think about that. And when he died, I was the only white man there. So I respect, I love people. I'm glad I had a chance to be in the greatest country in the world. I just went back to my home country. As much as I was for it, this is still the greatest country in the world. I'm an American from Croatia. I don't know how else to describe it.
Perfect. I'm going to end on that note.
Okay.
I've been speaking with Steve Basic, and he came from Croatia in 1938. This is Janet Levine for the National Park Service, and I'm signing off.